Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. In today's show, we'll be talking to Mr. Bob Layton. He is the Chief Revenue Officer at Digital Defense. They're a leading vulnerability and threat management solutions provider with offices in San Antonio, Texas, and other remote offices dispersed throughout the country. Bob, thank you for your time this morning, and we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ravi. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. We do a little bit of background snooping on you, not a background check or anything, but we look you up on LinkedIn, kind of do some Google searching. You seem to have a very rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us more about your background and how you actually got started in cybersecurity?
Sure. So I found myself drawn into cybersecurity because it was really a place where there was always disruption and an interesting conversation, and I always gravitated toward it, whether it was when I was working directly with clients or owning and developing a managed services business. The security industry has changed in some ways in the way that services are being consumed, but in many ways, some of the same vulnerabilities and some of the same threats that we had, 15, 20 years ago are still plaguing us.
Okay. Now, tell us more about Digital Defense. Is this a company that you've helped started, or you just took a role with it? How did it get started, and kind of where is it at today right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So Digital Defense is celebrating their 20th year in business this year. And as you said, we're a vulnerability management and threat platform, and we are a SaaS. And so we operate entirely out of AWS, which makes us very easy and quick to consume and monetize. I didn't have any play in the founding of the company. I joined back in February really to lead them on to a transformation in this stage of disruption in the market. And that stage is really defined as the way people are consuming services and how they're solving for the security problems that they have, whether they be in the cloud or whether they be on premises or even in hybrid. And so I'm driving that go-to-market and creating strategy around it.
Okay, excellent. Now, we had mentioned before the podcast that you have, outreach mostly in Texas, but you're across pretty much all the U.S. Do you have any overseas operations, like in Asia, the Middle East, or Europe?
We do, and we certainly sell in those other countries. I would tell you that a majority of our customer base is in North America, but we do have thousands of SaaS subscribers, and that does include folks all across Europe, a few in Asia Pac, and obviously a few in LATAM as well.
Okay, cool. Now, tell us about your customer base. Who is your sweet spot? Is it more of the small and medium-sized businesses, the Fortune 500, or could it be perhaps a mixture of both?
It's really a mixture of both, Robbie. And what I would tell you is Digital Defense, in the space that we're in, which is vulnerability management, we inform a larger security program that in small to medium businesses may be quite simple. And in the enterprise, it could be quite sophisticated. And so think of us as the guards, gates, and guns that protect all of your digital assets. And so in that example, if you're in an enterprise, we may be informing teams of people that are dedicated just to servers and operating systems or user communities. And in the mid-market, we could basically be the linchpin or the underpinning of an entire security program to be effective. And in the small market, we might be that one thing that they're able to do to try to fend off any kind of cyber risk.
Excellent. Now, I'm looking at your website here, and you have a whole wide range of solutions and services within threat hunting vulnerability assessment realm. Can you elaborate more on some of these services that you have to offer, and like what are your more widely used or in-demand services?
Absolutely. So as I had shared before, we are one consistent platform as a SaaS. And so on that SaaS, we're able to deliver not only vulnerability management, but also web application scanning and penetration testing. And from there, depending on the situation, we have different integrations with other ISVs. And we also have different offerings that we can bundle and package in. We have an advanced threat sweep solution, which allows Windows clients to actually understand where active threats exist in the world and what's actually being executed. And then we also have a threat landscape service where we look at community-sourced feeds and dark web as well to really look at what are all of those things that maybe we don't know that's lying out there in wait or hasn't really shown any indicators of compromise yet, but we need to be aware of how to locate them and remove them from our systems. So, you know, in total, one platform, many different services can come from it. And then we have integrations out there as well. So we're integrated into Microsoft's Defender ATP platform, where we actually share feeds back and forth between ourselves. We're also integrated with Palo Alto's SOAR platform, both Demisto and the Cortex platform. So we're the only vulnerability management that's in that integration with Palo Alto, and we have a whole host of others from SIM providers to NAC providers to other big security names. So all told, we're able to really come in and tuck in nicely with the operations that you've already got around security platforms and programs.
Okay, excellent. Now, Bob, my image of penetration testing, threat hunting is that you actually have to be like on site. And I think that's what most people kind of think of. That, you know, you see people in their hoodies, you know, whatever, looking like cloak and dagger, kind of like James Bond, you know, breaking the lines of defense. But now, is it possible to do a threat hunting or penetration test exercise purely 100% remote? So, for example, you may have a client out in California, but you may be out in Texas. How can this remote pen testing actually work? What are the mechanics behind that, just on a high level for our audience to understand better?
Yeah, absolutely. So so for a point of clarification, we're not in the business of threat hunting. We use some advanced services that help us identify threats and indicators of compromise, but we're not a threat hunting service. As far as penetration testing, we are able to do this remotely. We do some of it where we're on site. We actually do operate a red team where we can do some social engineering and things like that. And folks that are in our partner community and even some of the industries that that we have served and contracted to directly will actually call us in to do things on site. But to your question, we can operate this remotely because we are an agentless solution, which going a little bit further, we have a dissolvable agent. So we are able to go in and run penetration testing remotely. And whether it's on-site or remote, again, we use our platform the same way, and we're able to inspect both internal and external facing assets to identify if there's any indicators of compromise and what the threat posture is for the client.
Okay. Now, after the pen test, you provide like a report to your clients telling them how to remediate the weaknesses or the gaps in their infrastructure?
That's correct, yes. So we not okay. only serve organizations that are ASV certified, they're scanning vendors where they're actually able to do the attestation. So we actually do work with some of our partners that do attestations. We actually can do PCI attestations as well. So, but yes, we have a complete suite of reports that it gives them everything they need to remediate.
Okay. Now, I'm also noticing on your website that you do stuff with compliance and GDPR compliance audit. Can you please explain a little bit more about that? And do you do anything with the CCPA also, or HIPAA for that matter?
We do. So our buyer, and this is really globally, our buyers are always really in two camps. They're either a compliance buyer or they're a security buyer for security's sake. And specifically around GDPR, we're working with a number of partners and firms in the UK. And there it's really all about cybersecurity essentials, which is really kind of the term that the UK government has used for folks to reach GDPR compliance. And so all of the businesses there are really looking for cybersecurity essentials services. And some of those are coming directly from products that they're you know, purchasing and deploying themselves, and some of them are coming from partner organizations that are packaging together things like digital defense along with EDR and SIM and some other technologies.
Okay, excellent. Now, are there any customer success stories you'd like to share with us, or any client testimonials, obviously without giving the name of your clients?
We have so many. We have thousands of clients on our SaaS platform, and some of them, and I'm really proud to say this, some of them have been on our platform for as long as, you know, 12 to 15 years. So it's exciting to serve someone that long, especially in an industry that changes as much as security does. I would tell you that without naming names, the common thread that you'll find with our customers is that they're very, very satisfied with the services that they receive from us. So from an NPS, if you're familiar with Net Promoter Score and how that works, we have a 79 Net Promoter Score, and our customer satisfaction is around 98%. And so we've got very, very happy clients. And one of the things that drives that satisfaction is the rapid deployment of our platform, the ease of consumption, and just the simplicity of the reporting. So security can be a very, very sophisticated and complex thing to report on. And so rather than adding to the complexity of it, we really try to make it less complicated. And so we deliver our reports in a form that is not only legible and understandable to the layperson, but you can also go deeper and go down for the security professional. And I would frame it this way, Ravi. If you are a CIO or CTO listening to this podcast, and you, one of your executives or a board member were to ask you a simple question, hey, how are we doing? Their answer should not be rattling off a whole bunch of hash streams and CVVS scores and all that kind of stuff. It should be a very conversational thing. It should be, well, I would say that we have kind of a C- right now. However, we've identified those systems that need to be remediated, and the following are tied to key processes. We have a schedule, and once we remediate those, we'll have a posture of a B+. And so what I just described is something that we call the GPA scorecard. And so our reporting for our clients is simple and easy to understand. It's very visual. We allow our partners to brand it and white label it themselves. And when you look at this, just like your grades in school, A through F, very easy to understand. Everybody gets it. And then we also go through and assign a numerical risk score as well. So we just kind of have taken some of the complexity out of it. And that is where you'll find most all of our success stories centering.
Thank you. Excellent. Now, Bob, what made you go to a purely 100%? Obviously do some stuff on site to a SaaS-based platform using the AWS. What is it about the AWS that made you choose that versus other cloud providers like Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure?
So we were very early to the SaaS model. We were first operating it in a commercial data center, and then with the advent of AWS and the myriad of services that they've released since coming out, I forget the count. I've been to so many AWS reinvents, but every single year there's a whole another list of services that they've come out with on the platform. But AWS was allowed us back in 2018 to have the most flexibility and the richest experience for our clients. So we moved all of our operations into AWS, and we operate in multiple availability zones, not only in North America, but also in the UK, and you'll see more availability zones coming on to serve the European market, and we're also making plans to add an availability zone in Japan.
Okay, excellent. Now, Bob, I've penetration testing and vulnerability management is something that I've talked about quite a bit with other clients before in my writings in my last book. A lot of SMBs, like the mom and pop stores, they just simply really don't understand what it's all about. And I think the first red flag that comes into your mind is, well, how much is this going to cost me? Now, can you help us understand the role that vulnerability and threat management plays in helping, like, especially like me, the mom and pop businesses or the SMBs, how to help them manage their cyber threat landscape and how to mitigate cyber attacks?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, let me start by saying this. Everyone has heard how many unfilled cybersecurity roles there are in the industry. They've estimated it to be thousands, if not millions of jobs that aren't fulfilled. And what I would tell you is everyone's looking at it in the wrong way. It doesn't mean that our schools need to start up STEM programs to try to go and appeal to big businesses. What it means is we need to begin grooming people to be more security aware as professionals. And the greatest place for them to look for a great job is with managed service providers, MSPs, MSSPs, MDR providers. This is really where the industry is going, and especially for that small to medium business. And so if you're listening to this podcast and you are a smaller business, let's say you have less than 20 employees, maybe less than 50 employees, you to try to have all of the talent and technology you need to tackle security yourself is really, really a challenging thing that you don't want to dive into. You want to find a really good, solid, local managed service provider that can serve you with everything you need. And on the small end of the market with fewer employees, the disappointing thing is many times people don't think they have assets worthy of being protected, and so they don't allocate budget toward it. And on the high end, the challenge is it turns into a tools conversation rather than an outcomes conversation. And so there's some challenges there as well. But I would tell anyone listening to this, if you're in a small to medium business, you absolutely have risk. And you absolutely have assets to protect, and you are the ones that cybersecurity criminals are targeting, because not only is it easy to penetrate your systems, but it's also easier to extract some sort of ransom as well. And so I would say, we absolutely have a solution as an industry for small businesses. It's not just for the enterprise.
Excellent. So you think that the future for the MSPs and MSSPs is really going to propel upwards, especially now with everybody working remotely and everybody being cost conscious, right?
I absolutely do believe that. And there was a book that was written a number of years ago called The Big Switch. You've probably seen it or even read it, but the Big Switch was all about rewiring the world and reinventing how IT and the internet is a utility, if you will. And it was written by a gentleman by the name of Nicholas Carr. And again, it was called The Big Switch. And I think it's as relevant today as it was when I first read it probably about 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. But if you look at what's going on right now, the cybersecurity landscape is not getting any easier to solve, and the managed service providers right now in this disrupted world are stepping in to fill that void and to deliver those outcome-based services. So that's really what's happening right now. That is it's not just a trend. It's the most common sense thing that's happened in IT in a while.
Now, Digital Defense has recently launched a new partner program for MSPs. Can you tell us more about that program and why is the timing of this so critical or at the right juncture, I should say?
Absolutely. And so, again, back to whatever flavor you may be of service provider, a standard MSP offering, basic network and desktop services to a managed security services provider, all the way up to a managed detection and response provider. There's a couple of things that have not been solved in this industry, and that is no one has really taken a look at a partner program from the perspective of the provider. They've always approached it from the perspective of the software or the tool or the hardware or the product. And so we're able to bring a partner the ability to rapidly monetize security into the portfolio and the pricing and packaging they've already created. And we just simply fuel not only the ability to deliver excellent services, but to do so with profitability. Second, we optimize the offerings that they've already created. So we're not coming in and saying, sell digital defense. We're coming in and saying, tell us what you have created for your clients, and we'll show you a way to enhance it. And oh, by the way, with all of the integrations we have, we tuck right into your operations runbook. And then finally, and perhaps this is the biggest one, proof of value. So for any client that's consuming managed services, the number one question they have every single month is, why am I paying you this? Or why am I paying you this much? And I need to know that I'm getting what I'm paying for. And a lot of times, if something doesn't go bump in the night, or if your service provider is giving you excellent services, and maybe you haven't had any security incidents at all to remediate, it's funny, but people actually look at it as, why am I paying you? We haven't really fixed anything. So we deliver what's called proof of value reporting, which is easy to understand reporting. I talk about our GPA scorecard. I talk about our threat risk profile. And we have a number of different reports that we generate. And all of our MSP partners can adopt those and brand them as their own. And so rather than stepping in and saying, hey, come and be a digital defense partner, we're saying, let digital defense be a partner to your offering. And clients love it because it changes the conversation. Instead of, hey, have you logged into your portal to see how many tickets you have with us lately? Now that customer experience or customer success manager can go to the client and say, let's review your proof of value reporting for the month. Let's take a look at how you are doing. And some of our partners have VCIO services where they're able to enhance that conversation at that level. So this is really where we're finding so much traction. And it's amazing to see the uptake, and we have partners large and small all across the U.S. and Canada and the U.K.
Now, here's another question. There's over 2,000, cybersecurity vendors that serve all kinds of products and services. Why should a company look to digital defense to come to you to partner versus the other 2,000 vendors that are out there?
Couple of things. First of all, we're not a flash in the pan. And what I mean by that is we're not someone who has gone through this rapid funding cycle, arced, been listed public, and now we just kind of languish there. We get acquired, our technology goes out of favor. We've been around for 20 years, and we have the client satisfaction and the subscriber base to back up the fact that we are just as relevant as ever before. There's a thought that there are some technologies that aren't innovating or that are stale. And I guess in some ways, vulnerability management is not all that sexy and exciting, but it is an integral part of a successful security program. And so what I would tell you is digital defense is not only a healthy and relevant company for anyone who is looking to work with us directly, but also for our partner community. We have exceptional technology that will really set apart your offering.
Okay. Now, as we move on to the next part of the show here, which is about some of the cyber hot topics today, the first one is the Internet of Things. Now, I find that proposition or that concept to be very scary. Everything's all connected together. It just increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker. I mean, Bob, I've seen people with smart cars, they just clap their hands, your car backs out. And I've seen smart homes. I mean, it's crazy. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I just have a simple 2003 Honda Civic, and I'm happy with all the analog instrumentation. I mean, do you have a smart home or smart car? What are your thoughts on the IoT?
I've developed a theory around the IoT, and I think that it's going to continue to grow. More and more things are going to get connected to the network. It's just going to happen. Whether it's speakers in our homes or door locks or Alexa or whatever it may be, or Siri. I think the thing that everyone needs to be mindful of is that if everything is connected to the network, then the network just got a whole lot more important to protect. And a few months back, we launched an initiative to really protect hospitals and healthcare organizations, and it was the Digital Defense $1 Million Challenge. And it was where we really went out to hospitals, patient admitting facilities, and we said, please let us help you identify the ransomware and the malware that may be inside of your networks. And many of those things that we were protecting, Ravi, were IoT devices. So I use healthcare as an example because it's probably the most IoT-rich environment where something could really go badly. So not only are there patient care devices and monitoring and things of that nature, but there's also now surgical elements that are connected to the network. There's other elements that if a hospital was compromised, the results could be really, really bad. And so we're able to do authenticated scans and identify all of your IoT devices as well, which is a differentiator for us. Not everyone is in that space yet, but we're able to look at all of those devices as well. And so happy to say that we delivered all of our services that we had committed out to the community. We have some great new friends in the healthcare industry because of it. But IoT is a really, really big deal. Really big deal, and it's not getting any smaller.
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading a lot of stories in news headlines, news headlines, where a lot of, patient devices are now at risk. And Bob, it's scary. I mean, if you have a pacemaker and if a cyber attacker decides, I mean, it's scary. I mean, you can be walking one day and all of a sudden they decide they want to do something, and you can have a heart attack and die. I mean, that's pathetic. I hope a cyber attacker would never go to that extreme, but you just never know in today's world.
Well, they are being compromised, right? We know that hospitals have been compromised and held for ransom. So, I mean, we know that they are preying upon that community. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. But anyway, the next hot button issue I kind of want to get your thoughts on is artificial intelligence. Now, to our subscribers who may not know what that is, it's basically where you're trying to imitate the thought and the decision-making process of the human brain. Now, Bob, we'll never really understand the human brain ever. We've only maybe touched 1% of it. But we're trying to use that now for cybersecurity, and it's now one of the biggest buzzwords that's out there. You know, people think it can be used especially for automation purposes, especially when it comes to pen testing. What are your thoughts in AI, and do you make use of that for your pen testing platforms?
We do, and I think that this has kind of become an industry buzzword, ML and AI, machine learning and artificial intelligence. So I wanted to kind of back it up with a little bit more. We do use it, and we use it to inform the overall threat risk and posture that we deliver to our clients. So for us, we've got a number of patents granted. And one of the patents that we have granted is for our scanning engine. And so if you're unfamiliar with how vulnerability management and pen testing works, there's an agent or agentless scanning engine and process that is involved. And we own that technology. It's our own scanning engine. Some of the folks in the industry use an open source engine for their scanning, which I suppose is okay. But in this world of cybersecurity where MSPs are an attack surface, right? Everyone who's trying to get to the banks, the credit unions, the insurance companies, the healthcare, the retail, what's one of the easiest paths? Probably through their managed service provider. Why? Because they know where all the holes in the network are and they know whether or not something is patched. So managed service providers are a huge attack surface and target for the cyber criminals. We use our AI and ML to harden the perimeter and build a moat around our partners' environments and our customers' environments. And a lot of that is based on the fact that we own our technology for the scanning engine. We don't rely on a community supported. We just think that there might be a little bit of a risk there in just leaving it out to a community supported scanning engine. So we bolster our own IP, our own intellectual property with AI and ML.
Excellent. Now, the next topic I want to kind of get your thoughts on is something we've talked about before the show started, the remote workforce and COVID. Now, you know, COVID has just basically changed the world upside down. And the concept of the remote workforce was something that people didn't think would ever happen until maybe 3 or 4 years out from now. But now we've seen it happen in just a matter of 2 or 3 months. So what are your thoughts on this remote workforce? How has it impacted you and your clients? And how have you come to adjust to this new and dynamic landscape?
Well, to be funny for just a minute, for me, COVID means that I don't have to put on socks and I can wear flip-flops all day and still look good on video calls. But I think working from home and working remotely has really been a challenge. We saw a lot of our customers, when they were migrating their employees to home, they were facing challenges for the very first time. Their IT help desk had never, ever supported that many people that were remote. They were able to walk down the hall and say, hey, can I update your system, or can I take a look at something that triggered in one of our tools that, you know, your browser might need an update. To where now they're supporting entirely remote workforces. So not only did it require different tools to support all those people, but it also required, in some cases, a completely new operations handbook. So we have a lot of folks that have struggled with that. And we actually released our agent. We have always been agentless, as I talked about earlier, from our SaaS platform, but we have released an agent. So for those assets that don't often come back into the corporate network, or maybe are remote workers at home with, you know, a laptop, desktop, et cetera, we now have an agent to address that. But the other thing is, and this is going to sound strange, Robbie, but the problem with COVID and working from home is going to be going back to the office. And it's not that you have to deal with spilling your coffee on yourself during the commute. It's that you now need to be aware of what is our security posture with all of those assets now coming back to the corporate network, right? They've all been out in people's homes with kids playing video games on them, attached to, you know, Wi-Fi networks where your neighbor might be sharing the Wi-Fi or hacked into it. And so now you have all of those assets coming back. And I would tell you that very few people know what their posture is. And I would tell you that very few people are gating or planning for an incremental come back to the office or just saying, come on back. And I think there's some risk in that.
Right. In fact, yeah, I live in a huge apartment community here in Chicago, Illinois, and a lot of my friends who were working in the office, now working from home, a lot of their companies are now saying don't come back until September of 2021, or if at all, just we're going to do a very, very slow incremental phase in approach. And Bob, one more issue I kind of want to raise is I think these IT security teams, they didn't realize that a huge risk is the intermingling of the home networks with the corporate networks. You know, for example, if you're using something with your home network, that could actually transmit over to the corporate network quite easily and cause even more disruption that way too.
There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Now, the next one I want to bring up is cybersecurity insurance policies. I'm sure in penetration testing, you've got clients maybe asking you, okay, well, you've done the pen test. I've done the remediations you provided in your report. Now, how do I financially protect myself from a downfall in case something is to happen again in the future? Has anybody asked you about that? And do you provide any advice or recommendations on cybersecurity insurance? That's one of the biggest hot-button topics right now.
Yeah, and this is actually a pretty timely question. I didn't know you were going to bring this up, but we have had in the last 4 days a client come to us through one of our large partners, actually one of our large global partners, and ask if we provided ourselves cybersecurity insurance policies, and we don't. However, we do have folks that we partner with, and I think that this is an area where much like GDPR and much like, you know, PCI and HIPAA and all the other compliances, regulatory bits, we need to really look at, is there a posture that says that someone is less likely to be under threat from a cybersecurity attack? And the answer is yes. But in the insurance industry, they haven't really decided on what it is that they're going to recognize as a good posture. And how does that translate into an actuarial table as to what their risk is? That's yet to be determined. I think that's a place where the insurance industry can evolve. But everyone asks about it, particularly in retail and in distributed businesses, right? They're trying to protect themselves. And I think this is something we're going to see develop over the next year.
Yeah. As I told you, my next book's going to be about this, Bob. And I got to tell you one thing, the cyber insurance industry is a very murky industry. There's not a lot of information about it out there, and there's a lot of not a lot of clear-cut answers out there either. I think it's even more confusing than choosing a medical insurance plan off of Obamacare. Not to get political here, but it's very confusing. I mean, for example, you may think that you're protected, but then you may not be totally protected if you were to file a claim. And I think for different attacks, they offer different kind of riders or different kind of addendums to your main insurance policy. It really gets kind of complicated with that, I think, in my opinion.
Oh, no, absolutely. And a great example with Cher and with choosing a healthcare plan. It's a great example.
Oh, believe me, the Obamacare can get confusing, but we won't go there on that one. But anyway, so now the last issue I want to talk about here before we wrap up our show is the data privacy. We've talked about that before. The GDPR and the CCPA, they're starting to get red hot, you know, on fire right before COVID hit. COVID hit, then they really backed off because they didn't want to charge fines and penalties. Now I'm seeing uptick in the news stories where the fines and the penalties and the audits are now starting to ramp up again. And, you know, I think they're good legislation. I think now other states are trying to come out with their own brand of the CCPA. I think even Brazil kind of came out with their own version of the GDPR. I think it's confusing, and now there's talk of having like a national cybersecurity privacy policy. What are your – I know it's a huge question, but if you can just brainstorm for a couple of minutes, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I'll answer it personally first. You know, I've done a lot of business and work in internationally, and I can remember speaking on the topic of GDPR in the UK a few years back when it was first coming out, right before they activated it. And my biggest challenge with it was there really wasn't any kind of standard essential layers where everyone was in agreement. It kind of came out and GDPR was there for the EU. And then you share the example now with the CCPA and with California. I think everyone has the right intention in mind, but stepping out there and doing it fragmented, it's going to frustrate people, and it's not going to encourage compliance. It's going to encourage people to architect ways to not have to be subjected to the regulation. And so I think that we're really in need of a national and an international conversation on how are we going to create some standards that everyone can adhere to.
Okay. Now, Bob, there's also, I've been hearing some talk, like how after 9/11, the Department of Homeland Security was created. And I'm kind of hearing some ripples in the water of creating a Department of Cybersecurity as a part of the federal government. Have you heard anything about that, or what are your thoughts on that?
I have heard that, and I think it's a fantastic idea. I think that it, not only is it being weaponized by state actors as far as you know, cybersecurity attacks, right? It's kind of maybe we'll come to a point where we don't send our young men and women out on a battlefield. Maybe we just basically hack each other. I don't know. But I do think that it's something that we ought to look at, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
Excellent. Now, Bob, as we wrap up our show here in the next few minutes, I just want to talk about the threat landscape in general. What are your thoughts what's the cyber threat landscape going to look like coming into Q4 now that we're in it, and what do you think 2021 will look like? And what do you think the biggest cyber threat will be apart from COVID? So forget COVID ever happened. What do you think the biggest threat out there will be?
Well, it's a funny question, Ravi, because many of the OWASP top 10 threats that are out there, the most common things that are exploited, are threats that have been around for a really long time. You know, a SQL injection threat or something, you know, on an Oracle server or what have you, things that have been around forever. So much of it comes down to good hygiene. And I would relate it back this way. We all know how to be healthy. We know how we should have a good diet. We should exercise. We should stay away from things that aren't good for our bodies, but we really don't do it, right? We eat too much. We don't exercise. We're sedentary. We might drink too much alcohol. We may, you know, choose to smoke or do something like that. That's not good for our bodies. And for the IT professional, they know what they should do to maintain their systems, but it's either inconvenient or it's a hassle or it's expensive. And so I would bring it full circle and come back and say that's part of our value proposition that we bring not only to the market directly but also through our partners, which is we give them an easily consumable, rapid time to value, rapid monetization. We optimize things. We give you proof of value reporting. We make it really simple. It's sort of like we're bringing the Peloton to all of the people in their home so they can stay healthy. We're bringing cybersecurity vulnerability management to the masses in a way that they can easily operate it and consume the value.
Okay. Now, would you have a laundry list that you may tell clients or even your close family or friends what they can do to mitigate themselves from being a victim of a cyber attack?
What could someone do to mitigate a cybersecurity attack if they're just a neighbor or a friend or a family member? Is that the question?
Or even just the client. I mean, obviously, I mean, you could write an entire book on this, but just do you have like off the cuff a list that you can tell people or?
Well, I would just like I would tell my children or a family member is don't trust everything that pops up in your browser. Don't click on everything. Don't be afraid of the internet and don't be afraid of your applications. But take some time to make sure that you maintain your patches, your updates on your software. And just practice some good hygiene in that way. And there's even service providers for the home market as well, and there's software packages that allow you to protect your browsing and your file integrity for your home machine. So be an informed consumer, and don't trust everything that's out there.
Okay. Well, Bob, that kind of brings up just one more question here. We all have been hearing about the Zero Trust framework. That's another big buzzword being bandied out there. What are your thoughts on the Zero Trust framework, and does your company actually implement that in their services?
So we absolutely use it for our own as a guiding principle, and you know we're SOC 2 Type 2 compliant. We go through a lot of different audits. We work with a number of both Fed agencies and civilian agencies serving the federal government. So we have a lot of different controls that we subject ourselves to. If you think of Zero Trust, it's like a diode, right? There's different layers to get into the assets and into the keys to the kingdom, right? And so I do like Zero Trust. It can be very, very restrictive, but Zero Trust is something that if you can afford to implement all of the controls, it's absolutely a game changer, and you can really protect your organization with it.
Excellent. Now, Bob, finally, how should someone get a hold of you if they're interested in maybe subscribing to your services or becoming a partner of yours for digital defense? How should they reach out to you? What's the best way?
Yeah, absolutely. The best way is to visit us online at digitaldefense.com. And there you can not only browse through more information about what we've talked about today, Ravi, but also ask your managed service provider, ask your MSSP or MDR provider, if they're providing digital defense inside their services. And you'll find that many of them do. And so you may even be under the protection of digital defense and not even know it. So we would love to have you visit our website. We would love to have you browse our content and hit us up with any questions and allow us to chat with you.
Okay, sounds excellent. Bob, we thank you for your time. We know you have a very busy schedule, but once again, thank you for your time this late morning here in Chicago, and we hope to have you again in a future podcast.
Great conversation, Robbie. Thank you for the invite.
Thank you. Take care.